Christian Radio Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show. Today is September 14th, 2017. It's 8 o'clock in the morning here on the West Coast. I want to thank you for joining us and thank our affiliates at kepw.org for listening in when you get to hear this podcast. Today we have, I'm very excited, we have a returning friend of our show, Dr. Sheila Parks. And I have to say, the one thing that I really love about this venue is I get to meet a lot of activists that nobody hears about, but who have done tremendous work in helping to save our planet and keep our country from falling off the cliff. So thank you, Sheila, for coming to the show. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Lonnie. It's so wonderful to be here and to know you, too.
And really, thank you for the work that you've been doing. You know, as usual, I like my guests to sort of run the interview the way they see it. And so in that vein, what is it that you'd like to discuss today?
Well, let's talk about Florida and Texas and the hurricanes and the tropical storms. And let's talk about the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, that shill for the nuclear industry. And let's talk about how even now, with all the hurricanes and the tropical storms, all people are finally saying, let's look at climate change and the storms. No one is saying, except the anti-nuclear activists, let's look at the dangers the nuclear plants pose during all these storms.
Oh, Lord.
I mean, it's like another, we'll have Fukushima in the United States. I think that's what Libby Halevy called the radio show that she did on that. I can't remember exactly what she said.
Yeah.
Maybe it was Fukushima in Florida, I think, what she had said. And I had posted something that said, are we having Fukushima in Cape Cod? That's because of Pilgrim, of course, which is the exact same model as Fukushima.
Wow.
The world is crazy, Lonnie, need I tell you.
Well, they're psychopathic. The world's being run by a bunch of sociopaths, to be honest. Like, they really don't care about human life or life on our planet. And I think that climate change is really environmental collapse. I think that's too easy of a word to call it. I think it's environmental collapse. And what's interesting is I saw a tweet this morning on Beyond Nuclear, and they talked about, you know, with the hurricanes, it's time to talk about climate change, and that really we don't need nuclear. It's a dangerous, dangerous thing, because every storm, not only do we have the storm threatening the lives of people, but we have catastrophic danger in our midst. And you know what else is not discussed on this, along with it, is the chemical pollution. Like, the nuclear power plants have been designed to withstand major hurricanes. A lot of the chemical plants and a lot of chemicals are used in the nuclear process. So wherever you see nuclear power plants, there's chemical agents all around, chemical storage facilities. And I did a quick video on my YouTube channel, Nuts for Art, about 2 nights ago. I wanted to see where all the nuclear plants were in the path of Irma, right? And what astounded me is I found a little map with the nuclear plants dotted up the coast, up throughout Florida. But then there was another little map that showed all the chemical and Superfund sites, the chemical waste sites and the Superfund sites in the path. And then there was a map of where all the hospitals were. And this, if this isn't just the irony of it and shows you how completely psychopathic the people are that are running the show, the hospitals were almost in all the direct path. They were surrounded by nuclear power facilities and chemical waste and Superfund sites. Now, maybe the hospitals popped up because of the waste and the Superfund sites. I don't know, but it was really bizarre.
No, I used to, you know, when I was in prison that year, I finally worked my way up to get on work release at night. So I...
Well, what do you mean you were in prison?
Well, okay. I worked against nuclear weapons, and especially first strike nuclear weapons with the Catholic left. And although the Catholic left was filled with all kinds of other people of faith, it was more a community of faith than just the Catholic left. Quakers and Jews and Protestants and Catholics and Buddhists, you know, Native Americans.
Yeah.
Okay. So we were doing then the Plowshares Acts, which are still going on today, entering a nuclear power plant that made first-strike nuclear weapons, pouring our blood over the home, what would be the home for the first-strike nuclear weapon, making visible the blood that was already there, and then thinking and praying and waiting to be arrested. So I... you know, we had a trial, and we were looking at 18 years. We got one. They offered us community service. I said I just did the highest community service that I'm capable of doing, which was to do the plowship. And we went to prison for a year. All of us went. And so I worked myself up. I was a model prisoner. And all the people who go in, you know, as we go in as we don't go in as the low-income people of color that are so harassed, you know, in Michelle Alexander's book, Mass Incarceration. And so we went in as international heroes. Anyhow, so I'll tell you the beginning of the story, actually. So the Gloria McDonald, who was the warden of the prison in Rhode Island at the time we had do the crime, used to do rounds, like you said, I think every day. And one day, I don't know what she said to me. I have no idea what she said to me, but I said something really bad to her that she didn't like. And so the next day when I saw her, I apologized. I said, you know, I'm sorry, Gloria. I really like to be nonviolent, and that was a pretty violent thing I said to you. And the next day, they gave me this job that they, because I had worked my way up so I could get work release and get a job and leave the prison at night. That's how I started this. And... they were offering me all kinds of jobs that I, you know, that I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole. But the day after I apologized to her, because no one ever apologizes to anybody in prison except the, you know, the people who go in for political reasons. I don't know, no one, but hardly no one. And so they gave me the job, which meant I was able to leave the prison every night and work against toxic waste in the environment and against the super. It was just the most wonderful thing. I was there in the daytime for nuclear power and nuclear weapons, and in the evening at work release against the Superfund. So,
wow.
So that's my experience with this. But they were there. They've been there a very, very long time. I don't remember where they are now, but they've all been there. That's where they, you know, put all the waste. It's like the waste of nuclear power, only it's different waste.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. Thank you for giving your 1 year of your life to our country for in an effort to stop this. Because, I mean, as you've seen, they've just barreled through. But you know what? I think the efforts of people who have been engaged in this have made a difference. It has slowed the train down. It's not as egregious as it could be. That's why it's really important for us to continue to speak out, even though it looks like we can't beat them, we can't fight them, they have all the power. I disagree with that. I think it matters that we speak out. It matters that we stand up. It matters that we push back.
It absolutely does. It absolutely doesn't. You know, for me as a person of faith, I always say I tell my corner of truth in the world and I leave the consequences to God, to the goddess, to the Great Spirit, because I can't, but they do. I mean, people always say to me, oh, you gave a year of life in prison, as you just did. It was such a growing year for me, though, and such an important year in my life. And it was like the first time I got arrested, I had crossed that line. I said, oh, my God. Little did I know that was going to lead up to the prison time, a lot of jail time before the prison time. But if anything, the plowshares moves the left more to the left, and that is always good. And anything that we do for good in the world really, really makes a difference. That's just the truth of the world.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like this, talking about these nuclear power plants down in Florida. You know, we all, most people listening to this station or this show anyways, know that Turkey Point is a leaking sieve. It's been leaking high levels of tritium, same thing they have. Different reasons, but same thing, leaking into the basically the ocean. And Turkey Point, they said it took them so long to think about closing down anything and battening up the hatches down there. It made everybody who was paying attention to these nuclear power facilities super nervous that they, and in fact, I don't know if you've heard anything, but it is frighteningly silent out of Turkey Point post the flooding. We haven't heard whether they're back online. They say that they're up and full in power, but we don't know if anything's been damaged. Same thing with the chemical facilities. We have no, there's no assessment of this. We're on a need to know basis, and we don't need to know, I guess.
I'm going to come back to that. I just want to talk about the super funds for a minute. National priorities list, and it's any land in the United States that has been contaminated by hazardous waste and identified by the EPA, which of course doesn't exist anymore because of Trump. They're so toothless now, as a candidate for cleanup because it poses a risk to human health and the environment. As of February 27, 2014, there were 1322 Superfund sites on the national priorities list. 53 additional sites have been proposed for entry on the list. So that's what we're fighting against, you know, that, the nuclear waste, everything, the whole, and you're right, I don't ever say climate change. I say climate crisis and nuclear power crisis. But let's go back to Turkey Point. You know, that they were willing to risk another Fukushima or worse, to risk the lives of everybody on the planet, animals, everything, to risk planet Earth herself, shows how what hubris they had, what arrogance, what not caring, what not knowing about it. I don't care if their nuclear power plants are now built to withstand that. How do they know that? And how could they possibly think that it was okay to risk everything in the world to show how smart they were that these plants were built like that? It's just, so I would write, when I was posting stuff about it, I would write, Florida Light and Power and the NRC are continuing with their blah, 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 because that's what I felt it was, blah, 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 blah. And then to find out, when did I find this out? You must know it too, yesterday or the day before, that the second reactor at Turkey Point shut itself down. It was so dangerous there during the storm that had to shut itself down. I mean, what does it take to know that when something so dangerous as these tropical storms and hurricanes are happening, you have to shut down the nuclear power plants before, not during.
That's true. That's actually true. But you know what? It's the same thing up here in the Northwest. The Columbia Generating Station, actually, I read it on the NRC. It has actuation valves that are broken. It goes offline, upline. It's way over budget. The worst part about it is 15 miles away from Hanford, where all of those plutonium tanks, everything needs to be managed 24 hours a day. Columbia Generating Station is sitting, and Hanford are sitting on top of active earthquake faults that they know are bound to hit within the next 50 years, and they refuse to shut it down. If something happens at Columbia Generating Station that causes a nuclear meltdown, which is a high probability in an earthquake, they can't get into Hanford for at least 2 weeks. If they can't get into Hanford for 2 weeks, it's kablooey and nonstop fire, bye-bye North America. Talk about hubris. I mean, Hanford is the most polluted site on the planet, and yet they continue to run a nuclear power plant 15 miles away that sits on top of an active earthquake fault.
Yeah. I mean, how could they even build a plant if they know it's on an active earthquake fault? Pilgrim is the same thing here in Mass.
They seem to pick that. Don't you seem to think, like, if you want to find an earthquake fault, look at the nuclear power plants.
Oh, I'm laughing. Oh, God, it's so true, though.
It is true.
I'm just sighing because I do not understand the human race. I just do not understand it. Oh, when I, you know, there's a lot of good in the world, and there are a lot of good people in the world, so I'll preface what I'm going to say. That is true, and a lot of people doing good things. And on the other hand, it seems like the most evil, vile, immoral, amoral, wicked, beyond wicked people are running the planet and are doing even more devastation. And that is possible. I mean, you know, with Trump and his cabal taking the teeth out of every agency that wasn't so good in the first place.
Pinochet 2.0, that's what I call him. Seriously, he's just like Pinochet in my view. He came in to disrupt, dismantle. In fact, Bannon said that. They wanted to destroy every single American institution. That's what they did in Chile. They knocked out every safety net, every government institution, privatized everything. They had to militarize the police because they knew people would push back. And the bankers made a boatload of money for about the 10 years that Pinochet had control. And, of course, the people pushed back, and it knocked their democracy down quite a bit. If the United States would have left them alone, they would have a full democracy. But the United States decided to install Pinochet, just like whoever's running the United States installed Trump, in my view. Like, I seriously consider him to be Pinochet 2.0. They learned from Pinochet. They've made this much slicker. I mean, I was on Twitter this morning talking to people who were defending Donald Trump, who thinks he's a great president, that we are all just misrepresenting who he really is, that he's not a white supremacist. I'm like, who are you looking at? Like, for real. The guy defends white supremacy. I mean, he's on tape saying you have to have the right genes. What's that code for? You know? Beyond comprehension.
Well, look, we have been going around the world marauding it and putting in people in power that we wanted to do. We did it in Chile with Allende. We've done it everywhere. It's everywhere. And who kills Kennedy is still a question. Not that he was so great anyhow.
Well, look, this thing about the NRC being grotesquely negligent. I mean, the NRC should have ordered Turkey Point to be closed down. They have the right to do that, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Well, you know, that's an interesting question. Yes, I think the NRC has final, ultimate say on that. But the NRC has never seen a nuclear power plant that they don't love.
True.
You know? So I want to talk about that. Let's stay on this for a while. First, there's preemption, which is we the people cannot even in a public hearing say that nuclear power plants cause cancer without having everything else we said been wiped from the books if they were passing a bill because of what we said, because only the Congress and the NRC have the ability to say that legally. Legally.
What? Say that again? You mean if I were to go to a public hearing and say that nuclear power causes cancer, I would be kicked out?
No, you wouldn't be kicked out. And if you can say at a public hearing, I usually these days say, I know all about preemption, but I'm exercising my First Amendment rights, and I'm going to tell you that children that live near nuclear power plants have more incidences of leukemia than children who don't. Ian Feely, Dr. Ian Feely of the United Kingdom. No, I say it. But here's the thing. If you say it at a hearing, let's say at the Mass Legislature, when they're talking about passing a bill or something like that, and you say it can all be struck from the records, and they don't get to pass the bill. That's the law. I mean, it's beyond what?
That's the law. So if you're at a public hearing, a formal public hearing, and you say there's evidence that shows that children who live near a nuclear power plant are more inclined to get cancer, and that's why we don't want this near our in our community. They can strike that from the record entirely, whatever else you say after that.
It's a little unclear. It's not strike the record. It's worse than that. It's worse than that. There's something about they can't pass the bill because of that evidence.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
I stopped going to public hearings. I stopped going to them in the state of Mass. I'm not interested in going there if I can't say what I really want to say.
So we're prevented from saying what we want to say. The nuclear industry has tailored the laws to keep people from protesting and speaking out at public hearings?
Well, it depends. Well, it's not the nuclear. Well, the nuclear industry did it. The Congress did it, and the Supreme Court did it. They were the ones who gave away the power.
Wow. Wow. That is stunning. So it is even more egregious than that. I understand this thing about preemption because that's what community rights is about. Kai Hushke from Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund is going to be on next week, and we talk about community rights. And it is about overriding the preemption of the Constitution of the Commerce Clause. You know, if we have community rights, we can override the Commerce Clause. But without community rights, the preemption is that corporations, this is why we have Citizens United, because it basically they have more rights. They have more rights than actually communities do. They have equal rights to the federal and the state government. They have a right to profit. That's in our Constitution. So it is, it's really, this is a unpeeling. Now, who worked on these laws to prevent us from speaking out publicly? And when did that happen? Is this old laws?
People who own the nuclear power plants lobbied all the people who are in the Congress.
Wow.
And on the Supreme Court. I mean, it's pretty. So let me just go on to this, a part of this. So last night, I wanted to find out how the Nuclear Regulatory Committee gets its money. We were talking about that on several anti-nuke sites. So, and people have said it's hidden somewhere. You can't find it easily. It's hidden in the depths of their documents. So I just went into the NRC website and did a search for, how do they get their money? How do you get your money? And immediately this came up on a PDF. So the NRC gets their money from, tell me who you think the NRC gets their money from.
Doesn't the NRC get their money from the federal budget or the Department of Energy?
The NRC gets their money from the nuclear power plants. I'm trying to read the exact same thing.
Exactly. So they're funded by the very same industry that they're regulated? That they're regulated?
What you say, the final fees, this is a quote from their website. For final fees, the NRC fees are based on the final budget that the NRC receives from Congress. In other words, the NRC cannot determine its final fees for the year until Congress determines the NRC's final budget for the same year. Okay. Hold on a minute.
This is really fascinating.
These are all exact quotes I'm reading from. By the end of each fiscal year, the NRC collects approximately 90% of its appropriation through fees and then takes those fees to reimburse the U.S. Treasury. The agency, therefore, does not have access to the fees that it collects in the sense that all of the costs for the agency's activities must be first appropriated to the NRC from Congress.
So what does that mean? So let's talk about what that, let's put that in real language. So
I want to do something else for a minute.
State authority to regulate. So the preemption.
Okay. Why does the NRC, general questions about NRC fees. Why does the NRC collect fees? These are all quotes. The NRC is required by law to recover approximately 90% of its annual budget, here's what you just asked me, from the companies and people that we provide service to, for example, applicants for NRC licenses, NRC licensees, etc. The two main laws that govern NRC's fee recovery are called the Independent Offices Appropriation Act of 1952, and the Omnibus Reconciliation Act of 1990 as amended. So anyhow, that's with a
So we're working on 1952 laws and 1990 laws that force us as ratepayers to repay the Department of Energy. So our money. So in other words, our money is paying for this. Like, we're paying two ways. The government gives the NRC money, and then they have to pay them back from the fees they collect from the ratepayers, right?
Reading this, does the NRC get all of its funding from the fees that it charges? That's the NRC asking the question. No, we receive all of our funding from Congress. As required by law, we then collect, this is what I read already, we then collect approximately 90% of our budget from the fees that we charge over the course of the year, and that money is given back to the U.S. Treasury. That is called cost recovery.
So, wait a minute.
Wait. How are the NRC's budget and the NRC fees related? Each year, Congress decides the amount of the NRC budget. Then, as the NRC's budget increases or decreases, or as the number of applicants and licensees increases or decreases, the amount that must be recovered by fees from each licensee may increase or decrease.
That is outrageous. So we're paying as ratepayers twice.
Wait, let me just finish reading something else. Are there different types of fees? Yes, there are annual fees and hourly fees. Annual fees that are less than $100,000 are charged once a year, and annual fees over $100,000 are charged quarterly to each company or person that has a license from the NRC. These fees are intended to recover generic regulatory costs. Hourly fees are charged according to how much work the NRC performs that is related to a particular company. Hear this now. That's my side of the story. For example, a company that has a license for a reactor may pay $5 million in annual fees, in addition may pay $200,000 for hourly fees because they requested that the NRC review and approve an amendment to their license for that reaction. Okay.
They're being charged $200,000 an hour.
Yeah, we collect.
I thought my hourly rates were high. That's
collect fees from the people and companies for which we provide regulatory oversight. So they provide regulatory oversight to the people that pay them. For example, we collect fees from commercial nuclear reactors, from facilities that make the fuel for nuclear reactors, from companies that mine uranium, and from hospitals that use machines with nuclear material. So they get paid by the people that they regulate. Period, the end, over. And that's why they're shields for the nuclear power industry.
But we're paying that. So in a way, we're paying it twice because the NRC gives them money and then they pay it back, right? So we're giving them our tax dollars and then they pay it back with the money that they charge us on our utility bills.
No, the NRC doesn't give them money. The nuclear power plants give the NRC money.
Oh, so that's how the NRC stays afloat, is from the fees that they collect from the nuclear power plants.
Right. But wait a minute, but you're right, because the NRC has to give them money to build the plant.
Right. That's my point, is like, it seems like we're paying, coming and going. Like, it's just, it's a double dip. It doesn't seem, this is so egregious, and you're correct, that they have a sort of favorability to the nuclear power facilities because that leaves their jobs open. I mean, that's kind of stunning to think that the nuclear agencies, the way they've set this whole thing up is sort of a way so that you can't really undo. It's very difficult to undo this system when you look at how it's being set up, because if we were to put the burden of running nuclear power facilities on the burden of the American taxpayer, it would break the bank, right? And they are breaking the bank. I mean, the whole thing is just so egregious, Sheila. I just can't get over this.
So let me add a few more things. So, of course, the main thing is they all have to be closed down yesterday, and no nuclear power plant should ever, 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 never be built. So Senator Ed Markey, who has once himself called himself the pin man, he was the point man about energy.
I'm sorry, we can't hear you. What did you say now?
Senator Ed Markey from Massachusetts, one of my senators, along with Elizabeth Warren. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, better.
Has been the points man for energy in the Senate for decades. He has never said close Pilgrim now, and we have pushed him and pushed him and pushed him. He will make a strong statement about it, but he will never, never say close Pilgrim now. When we had, you know, when the Dems had the House, the Senate, the White House, the Supreme Court wasn't as tilted as it was now, he never said then close nuclear power plants. This is Ed Markey, supposedly the best nuclear power in the Senate. Forget it. I mean, Barbara Boxer was much better than Ed Markey, a million times better than Ed Markey. And Elizabeth Warren, who was so strong, who has actually made stronger statements against Pilgrim and against nuclear power than Ed Markey has never either said close Pilgrim now. And she has also been pushed and pushed and pushed. So Ed Markey was once approached, this is before I was working on this stuff, to work against preemption, to say this is, you know, immoral and illegal and it shouldn't be allowed that people can't talk about cancer. And he didn't do it. And so when I was in the office one day of Markey with, on behalf of Planet Earth, which I'm the founder of, which is a grassroots group working to close all nuclear power plants yesterday, never to open another one, and to move the Tokyo Fukushima Olympics 2020 out of Japan because the entire country is raided, Markey's answer was, well, we couldn't win that, so we didn't do it. They didn't even try. He didn't even try to get that preemption thing out of Congress. He's the hero, meanwhile, on energy.
Wow.
I won Barbara Boxer for president.
Why do you think Ed Markey is silent? I mean, who pays him? Who funds his campaigns? I guess that's where it all comes from, isn't it?
The question is to follow the money, to follow the money. That is the question. Actually, Lonnie, I think you were the one who gave an answer to that question to me once about his wife. Were you the one?
I don't know. Ed Markey's wife?
I don't know. I don't want to say. Somebody said that to me, but there's some connection that Markey has to nuclear power, and I don't know what it is. We'll take out the wife thing because I haven't checked on that, and I don't remember who said it to me. If it was, I'm pretty sure it was you, but you don't remember saying it.
No, I don't remember knowing about it.
What does Markey have? What is his connection? Why has he not made these strong statements? Why? And he has been pushed.
Yeah, he has.
There was a town hall down on the Cape one day, in this year, maybe last year, and Elaine Dickinson asked him something very directly. He dodged it. He didn't answer it.
Well, you know what I find astounding, Sheila, is the fact that we're so blasé about Fukushima still. It's almost 7 years, and Fukushima is not fixed. It is a gaping wound. It's almost as if we've just shot the patient with a bullet, with a 10-gauge bullet, and are just letting her bleed to die. They're doing nothing. I mean, and I know that they, I mean, I still believe that Fukushima is a worldwide emergency catastrophe. And every single nation on the planet who can knows about nuclear ought to be over there. Hell, I find, in fact, next week I'm going to have Dave Parrish on, where he's coming on Monday. We're going to talk about, I'm kind of concerned about this, as is Dave, about the Russians going into Fukushima and helping Japan. The Russians are now going to be actively engaged in helping try to stop and mitigate Fukushima, which they should have done a long time ago. I mean, we should have had a coalition of all these nations, regardless of politics, long time ago.
As long as Japan wouldn't let anybody in. Harvey Wasserman started a petition with hundreds of thousands of signatures that they delivered to the United Nations. So Helen Caldicott and others wrote an incredibly moving and powerful letter to Japan. And to the United Nations, to Ban Ki-moon. No one acted. No one, you know, about the urgency of a. This is Helen Caldicott, Dr. Helen Caldicott, talking about how they needed experts and doctors and et cetera. And in Japan, Abe Shinzo, their best friend forever of, what's his name, Donald Trump, they wouldn't let anybody in. Everybody wanted that to happen. We held a vigil at the Japanese consulate here in Boston with signs. It's an international emergency. Bring the experts into Japan.
You know what's going to be a real shock when they pull off these 2020 Olympics? When we start seeing young athletes having heart attacks and dying, or having severe, you know, like breathing problems and issues that are going to happen. Because, you know, the people go there, they go 3-4 months early, and they're going to be running and practicing right in those prefectures that have high levels. And I think that we're going to see some very serious problems with our athletes.
Well, yeah. I'm hoping we're going to still move them. You know, there was a group here in Boston that worked, and they got the bid out of Boston. You know, Boston did get the bid, and Boston did go for the bid, which was wonderful. There was a grassroots group working, of which I was very close to one of the women in it because I knew her from Occupy Boston. And then there was a more professional, we'll call them, whatever I want to call them, I don't know what word I want to use, more group with more connections that worked on it. And they stopped the Olympics from coming here. It was farther away than we have now for Fukushima, but I don't think we can just give up on that. I don't think we should just say it's going to happen. They're talking about having games in Fukushima Prefecture.
I know. I mean, Levy Halevy reported that Toshiba has actually taken reclaimed wood from Fukushima Prefecture, and they have built some Olympic buildings. They're going to have an Olympic stadium built.
Right. Yes, they're talking about building that in Fukushima.
According to her, they have actually, it's in production. It's going on.
I believe Libby then. It's crazy. People, I don't understand that people just care about money. They do not care anything about human rights.
Well, can you tell our listeners, is there a place where people can go to jump on that bandwagon and start putting pressure? Is there some organization that is really actively engaged in stopping the 2020 Olympics?
There is a Facebook page, which isn't too active, which is Stop 2020 Olympics. But hopefully there will be a group started that we will be doing. That we will start, that is in our minds of on behalf of Planet Earth, that we will do a group that will be focused only on that. We've had some of our core members, 3 of our core members, be extraordinarily sick during this period, so we've been not doing that yet.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what we're seeing a lot. I mean, people are getting, to be honest, this whole thing about, quote, climate change, I call it environmental collapse, because we are seeing people get sick. We're beginning to really see people like, you know, the mass animal deaths. Humans are starting to drop off like flies, too. I mean, we're having some serious deaths around the planet and catastrophic illnesses from people getting regularly sick, which disables us from actually actively. I know it's affected me over the summer, actively engaging in things that we could do. So what are some of the ideas that, who should we call to stop the 2020 Olympics? What are some suggestions to be able to stop that?
To keep on writing about it and talking about it is the first thing. The person who was a major mover in Massachusetts, in Boston, to stop the Olympics. Lives right locally to me. And they have published a book called No Boston Olympics, and I am in touch with him. And hopefully something will come out of that connection about what to do and how to proceed. And also my friend Jackie, who worked on the other thing about, who also worked on getting the Olympics out of Boston, not having them here. At one point, Jackie's group had Dave Zirin. Oh, let's talk about Dave Zirin for a minute. I'm not interested in sports. I have no interest in sports whatsoever, unless I'm playing them. But I'm not, you know, football, baseball, all that stuff. It's not anything I care about. Anyhow, except, though, there's this interesting thing that Dave Zirin writes this column on politics and sports, and I love it. I just love the thing of politics and sports that he writes, and I've been following him for a long time, and I get his emails twice a week. Oh, let's talk about this for a minute. So, and he has written about the horrors of Olympics in Brazil and other places. He writes about the Olympics and being not so good. The International Olympic Committee. So he came to Boston and spoke, and I went, you know, I had a Facebook and email relationship with him, but I went to meet him face-to-face. This is a couple of years ago, and to give him some papers and to ask him to please write about the Fukushima and the Olympics. So guess what happens? Nothing. Not a word, not a peep to Dave Zirin to this minute write about, and I love this man, except this is a huge flaw of his. He writes for The Nation. If you look at The Nation magazine, they have never written a word against nuclear power. What is
I have noticed that.
Oh, I take it back what I said about Senator Markey's wife. I take it totally, totally back, and I'm sorry I was so loose about that. You talked about the editor of The Nation having maybe some connection to nuclear power. Do you remember that?
Yes, and I think she does. I think her father is related. Her father is related to nuclear power. That's what that's exactly why The Nation doesn't discuss anything about nuclear. They're not proponents for, but they don't discuss any of the negative things. Like, they have been massively silent about the catastrophe
at
Fukushima.
Totally silent, like Bill McKibben. The Nation has never done. I tweet Katrina Denuvel, whatever her last name is, constantly. I tweet her. I, you know, do all kinds of things with her, like I do to Bill McKibben about nuclear power. Nothing, nothing, nothing. Same with Dave Zirin. Nothing, nothing, nothing. There was definitely, and I just really want to apologize again to your listeners that I even thought that it was Senator Markey's wife. I'm so sorry, Senator Markey.
Thank you for apologizing. He is one of, but you know, he's also silent. So it does bring us up the question, like, how is it that we have these so-called progressive and really people that are generally on the correct side of issues who act like Senator Markey, Elizabeth Warren, who generally are on the right side of social issues? Why are they silent? Ron Wyden, why is Ron Wyden, our senator, completely silent about? He went to Fukushima 4 times.
Really?
Yes. In fact, he's gone there more than 4 times now. He went there 4 times in the first few years. After his third visit, his office stopped talking to us because third visit, they put it under the Unpatriot Act, and so they are no longer allowed to discuss anything regarding Fukushima publicly.
Wait a minute, go back. It's on the Patriot Act now?
Yes.
So who can talk about it, Lonnie?
Not allowed to talk about it. They are not. They can take your opinions. They will say thank you very much. This is when I said this to Senator Wyden's aide. If that's the reason he's not disclosing the genuine harm this thing is to our planet, he ought to break the law, because they're not going to arrest everybody. This is where you have to stand up for America and stand up for the world, because we have these unjust laws, just like that law. That's why I'm a little stunned about this law about us paying for the NRC at both ends, coming and going. But the Unpatriot Act, the Fukushima disaster has been deemed a national security thing under the Unpatriot Act. They're not allowed to discuss anything about it with us at all.
Did Obama do it or Trump?
Obama did it. Obama is no friend. Look, in my view, it's obvious, the Obama administration really was completely transparent in showing us that the military runs our government. They take.
Well, Obama was pro nuclear power, anyhow. He was majorly pro nuclear.
Yes, so he's super pro nuclear.
Where did you have the exact citation to that, or do I have to go looking for it?
For what?
For where it is in the Patriot Act, and what year? Well, it was done when Obama was president, right?
I don't have the exact citation. I just know this because I was talking to my own senator, he was going over there, right? So the second time they were talking, yes, and we had some conversation. The third time that I called after he came back, the tone of his office was completely flatlined. They would not engage with me. They would not talk to me about it. And they basically said, look, we can't. We really, after the fourth time, when he came back the fourth time, I kind of got a little irritated, like, how come you guys are blowing us off? And I spoke to a supervisor at the office, and I was livid I was hot under the collar. So I asked to speak to somebody in the office, and they gave me some liaison in their office. And the guy basically said, look, we cannot disclose it. We would love to do that, but it's been put under the Patriot Act, and we cannot discuss it with you anymore.
Well, you know, that may be something to do with Markey and Warren, although we've never asked them, or at least I've never asked them to speak about Fukushima, but the law may extend to something that it's, you know, that it's broader than Fukushima.
Well,
I don't know.
The whole thing is a shakedown. Like, Obama was a state senator of Illinois, where there are two leaking nuclear power plants, which, by the way, the Natural Resource Defense Fund helped the Illinois legislature keep open because they wanted to succeed in their goal in closing down nuclear. So they believe that it's, you know, a leaking nuclear power plant is less toxic than the contamination from coal. And that is Bill McGibbon's story.
Say that again. Say that again. Who believes this?
The NRC, the Natural Resource Defense Fund, NDRC.
Oh, the National Resource Defense Fund is just on the side of nuclear power in the NRC. I don't know why people don't know that and still like them.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a shock. It was a shock to me. I called them up and had a big, long conversation with them. And the fundamental idea was, we think that the harm from nuclear leaks is much less damaging than the harm from coal. I said, you do get it that a lot of the harm from coal is because of the nuclear contamination that comes out.
That was the NRDC saying that to you, right?
Yep.
I don't know why it's not well known. I don't know why it's not well known that they're no good. It's so weird.
Because the title says Natural Resource Defense Fund. Who would think that that kind of an organization would defend nuclear? Because nuclear is not our friend. Nuclear, there is no peaceful atom.
But the point is, they get praised all over the place. It's so every time they do it, Robin Jacks is the person I want to say, the local, wonderful, wonderful. I was calling her Jackie. Robin Jacks is the local person who fought urgently and valiantly and wonderfully also not to have the Olympics come to Boston, one of our wonderful, wonderful grassroots activists, feminists that I know from Occupy Boston.
Yeah. Well, you guys, but I think you just barely got by. Like, there's still a push to have them have the Olympics there. There's still a big push. I mean, they didn't get – who got selected?
Boston. No, Boston is over. It's not going to ever be in Boston.
You think that they won't do it, that it's done,
no,
they're not going to come back?
No, it's not going to happen in Boston. That's done and done, period. I want to end this with something positive, which is that what we were talking about before at the beginning. For me, the most important thing to do is to make sure I keep on acting, writing, speaking on what I, on my knowledge and my information and my heart, my soul, my true beliefs. And to know that everything everybody does for good in the world really counts, and that is the truth. And that we've got to do that, and that we must never, never, never give up.
It's true. We can't get. And I think that's kind of where a lot of Americans are, and especially the youth. They've kind of given up. They look at these problems. They look so gigantic, and they're like, what's the point? We're just going to die from it all anyways. And really.
You know, when I was in Occupy Boston, I was in first the Women's Caucus and then some feminist affinity groups, and we were intergenerational. And that was, like, I think maybe one of the main things, if not the main thing, that all of us loved about it so much, that we went across all the generations. So I don't find that true about young people. It hasn't been my experience, is what I would say.
Well, how many of them are actively speaking out against Fukushima and nuclear power where you live?
Well,
I know where I live.
Well, because they're very busy speaking out about the climate, and that's the thing that we have
well,
to
see,
look at.
Well, see, for me, I think we need to really tie the climate collapse into the fact that nuclear contamination has precipitated and really helped, pushed it along because it's killing the biota. I even said this to Dr. Busby when I interviewed him. He thought that was an intriguing idea because I was like, you know, the Pacific Ocean is being attacked by Fukushima. And you can't have 6 years at the time we were interviewed. It was 6 years. You can't have 6 years of nonstop 100,000 tons of polluted water going into the at an unprecedented rate, plus the corium, plus everything else we don't know that went in there, and say it's not affecting the ocean. Our oceans are being affected by, and plus, let's add in all the nuclear bomb testing. All the contamination that's been here since they started it.
Bonnie, it's not only the ocean. It's the ocean, the earth, the soil, the rain.
Yes.
Everything is affected by Fukushima. It's also affected by every single nuclear power plant in the world because they all leak 24/7. But Fukushima, you know, accelerated what's going on with it to 200 million. Let me read to you. This nuclear power's carbon footprint. People that claim, this is from Radiation Truth, people that claim nuclear power is carbon neutral are considering only the direct emissions of the plant itself. In fact, it has the largest carbon footprint of any energy source other than fossil fuels. An incomplete list, mining, uranium or thorium, milling, transportation to millworks, converting ore to yellow cake uranium, conversion, construction of the uranium conversion facility, transportation of yellow cake conversion to UF6, enrichment, construction of the U enrichment facility and the cylinders used, fuel pellets, nuclear power plant construction takes years and uses heavy construction equipment, steel and concrete production are carbon intensive. Supporting infrastructure for NPPs, construction of roads, transmission, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Generators, heavy-duty diesel generators run the cooling system during routine maintenance, refueling, other normal shutdowns, scrams, and other power outages. Waste storage, building radioactive waste, storage facilities and storage containers, water processing, waste incineration, waste vitrification, monitoring of radioactive waste, decommissioning and decontamination, accidents, damaged reactors and accidents. Those are all the nuclear power's carbon footprint. What are people talking about? What is that about? What is Bill McKibben's connection to nuclear power?
Right.
That he has, I have him twice on tape saying, we need the new small modular nuclear reactors to solve the climate crisis.
Right.
Where is he coming from?
Right.
And the main point of the nuclear power is the radioactive waste that lasts millions of years. So we're not only killing ourselves, we're killing our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, and their children for millions of years.
It's true.
Talk about insanity, doing the same thing over and over. Talk about vile, wicked, evil, immoral, amoral. I don't have words for it anymore. It baffles my mind. My mind cannot compute what is going on.
Well, what they say is that people like us who have these positions, we're being hysterical. We're hysterical because there's just not the proof that nuclear power is harmful to the environment. There is just not the proof. And the reason that there's no proof is they don't do any studies because the IAEA has censorship authority over the World Health Organization. So they can suppress any studies they want. And in fact, I downloaded a paper, a scientific study journal in 2013 that showed it was done by some scientists in Spain. The International Atomic Energy Agency's safety culture model, which is widely used at every single nuclear facility, has never been empirically tested. In 2013, at that point, it had never been empirically tested. And when they tested it, there was 8 standards of safety that they set up at the IAEA. When they did test it, 7 failed unequivocally, 1 passed 50%. They were able to test it at a nuclear facility in Spain as part of this scientific study. So this was like a 3-year study that they did. So this is, it's astounding. It was a 2-year study. It is an astounding level of denial. And I think that's really kind of the sickness that's gone on in our entire culture is just the, which is why I find it fascinating that we have elected a known abuser. I mean, I talk about how a battery and abuse and racism are all interconnected into this nuclear lie because we have had to just pretend like it's not happening. We're expected to just shake our heads and stay in secret and allow, you know, they called St. Louis, there's that documentary, The First Secret City, that C.D. Stelzer said. And frankly, it was a perfect title because it was the first secret city. And the secrecy that's shrouded around nuclear is the same secrecy that we give to batterers in this country. Whenever we talk about battered women, we're talking about the women. We're never talking about the batterers themselves. The therapy that the batterers are, you know, men go to jail, but they don't get therapy. Do you know what I mean? Like, instead of understanding how to move forward and bringing it out into the light,
Boston many, many years ago. I'm sorry, called Emerge, which used to work with men who were batterers. Plus, is it okay if I interrupt you for a minute?
Please do.
I want to mention the name of Alice Miller, who wrote about parents, grandparents, caretakers, schools, etc., abusing their children, and that abuse being carried out on the national and international tables, and I would add on the locally also. She wrote about Hitler in a really important book to read called For Your Own Good, showing how he was a severely abused child, and we know how that got carried out on the national and international tables. And we don't look at that. For some reason, we don't have a look at the real psychology of some of this stuff. We're too busy looking only at the money. There's many more causes than money for how people, you know, beating up on women in other countries, on the whole misogyny thing, the whole white supremacy thing. But I want to go back also, Lonnie. So Alice Miller is her name, Dr. Alice Miller. She was a brilliant psychoanalyst writing from Switzerland, I think. There is stuff out about the dangers of nuclear power. There was the Ian Fairley one that I said to you a few minutes ago. There's Helen Caldicott, who talks about children are 10 to 10, 20 times more vulnerable to the carcinogenic effects of radiation than adults. Little girls more than boys, women more than men, and fetuses are thousands of times more sensitive.
Dr. Linus Pauling got a Nobel Peace Prize for his work on showed how children were very, very affected in utero in the 50s. Do you know what I mean? Like, we have known about, part of what the nuclear industry did was when Dr. Linus Pauling, Dr. Arthur Templin, and Dr. John Goffman did their work in the 50s and 60s and unequivocally proved that the use of man-made nuclear components is detrimental at every level of human life. There is no safe level. They immediately went to work to discredit them and suppress their work. So now people say, well, we just don't have the proof. That is so not true. There is tons of scientific study out there. I have books that from Dr. Goffman with scientific data in it that says, exposure to low-level radiation is extremely harmful. And yet, here we are, 2010, 11, and 12, where Dr. Busby had to redo some of these studies because that work had been so discredited. And yet, Dr. Busby's work is now winning court cases in Europe. So
I know. It's so wonderful. I love him. There's Dr. Timothy Mousseau. There are so many people who have written this and published on it. And why is it hidden? Why doesn't it have the same public face that the fossil fuels have? That's the question of the century for me, or one of them. Who is working to hide the terrible, terrible, horrific killing effects of nuclear power, and why? And we have to follow the money.
Well, this is my question. Where's the integrity? At what point is life more important than money? And if they're being coerced, they really do need to be willing to put down their lives for our planet, not just our country. We are talking a critical issue here with people who have the power, like Senator Wyden, Senator Markey, who ought to be speaking out. And if it means that their lives change because of it, so be it. But they really have a responsibility, like you and I, to speak out publicly against nuclear power.
I totally agree. Can I add, now that you're in Wyden again, I wanted to say this. And I had two experiences like that, not with Wyden, but with John Conyers and office and with Dennis Kucinich around voting rights.
Wow. You know what, Sheila, we have 15 seconds. So I want to thank you for joining us. I encourage everybody to put your courage feet on. And you've been listening to Lonnie Clark with Dr. Sheila Parks. It does matter. Your actions matter. Thanks, Sheila, for joining us.